Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather with Pet Honoring, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Hey, and welcome. All right, this is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, here in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. It is such a gorgeous day here. Thanks so much for joining us, and we have a really lovely show today. We have two guests. First, we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic of pet afterlife with afterlife expert Dr. Dennis Grega, a research psychologist, and Michelle Subbo, a master Reiki master teacher and ordained priest. Second half of the show, we're going to be talking and learning more about animal chiropractic with Dr. Allison Faber with FullCircleVet.net, and she's going to be chatting with us about what that is and how this can help our pet. So thank you so much for joining us, and welcome, Dennis and Michelle. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Lee. We're great. We're very glad to be here.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, your field of work is a little bit different from the norm. I know that pet death really affects us tremendously, and it's really tough for a lot of us to deal with, and your work specializes in soul afterlife and pet afterlife.
Yes. You know, anytime we lose anyone, whether it be animal or human, that are close to us, it leaves a very big hole, and it leaves a lot of questions for people. So
yeah.
It's a very disruptive thing and a very sad thing because, you know, we feel that we're losing something and someone that is very close to us and we love very dearly. And if we're not sure what is going to happen to those people and those animals, it can be a very disturbing thing.
Yeah, it's very, very scary, and I know that I think what adds a lot is so many religions will say that pets don't have souls, and that just is even more devastating. But what is your take on that, and what do you think?
Well, that is very, very unfortunate and very true. Actually, you know, Dennis and I were just discussing this, and he has a little something to say on the subject.
Originally our backgrounds were Christian, and so I can speak from that perspective. The idea of the Christian religion is that Jesus died for your sins, and so died for the human sins. People have souls. If animals have souls, then would he have died for their sins as well? And then it becomes ridiculous, and that's kind of why that religion has decided that animals don't have souls, because it doesn't make sense for them to have sin, in which case it would kind of throw in doubt the whole idea of dying for one's sin.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting, but your work shows that they do.
Oh, yes, they do. There's many reports of animals appearing either through mediumistic communications or through visions or dreams. It's overwhelming, the amount of information that has come through regarding animals' existence within the afterlife. As a matter of fact, there's actually even more detail, and that is they're located in an area of the afterlife that is kind of separate from the human one. Only because of the type of consciousness that is within the animal. But there is communication back and forth and visitation back and forth. That is, those that are in the afterlife can visit with their animals and be with them. There's actually called, I think they're called gatekeepers or animal trackers that have the ability to pick out the individual spark of or soul spark of that particular animal, and can find them in their area of consciousness in the afterlife, and actually bring them to the person that wishes to be with them or to visit with them.
Wow, that is so wonderful. I think every single one of my clients has wanted to know will I see my pet again? I mean, that is just such a huge component of, you know, when a pet dies, it, you know, what they want to know is, will I see them again? And that provides so much great relief or understanding that yes, you will see that, you will be with them again.
Oh, absolutely, Lee. You know, when we as humans pass, you know, if you've had an animal that is close to you, just like you've had people that are close to you, you know, they will greet you when you cross over. And, you know, I mean, what a wonderful feeling that must be to see,
yeah,
you know, loved ones and, you know, your animals. And, I mean, it's just amazing. You know, you can read about this type of event happening over and over and over again in so much of our literature and online and, you know, blogs and everything. It's just, you know, pretty undeniable that it does happen.
And your web... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Lee.
No, go ahead.
One of our... colleagues in the internet world that has a blog on the afterlife, her name's Kate DeLovico. She works as a nurse in the oncology ward for children, and so she's seen many children pass, but she's also a sensitive and has been able to communicate with some of them that have passed, and one of them is called an animal greeter. And she actually, one of her responsibilities is to greet an animal once it has passed and apparently take them to their area, you know, of consciousness in the afterlife. And she right now is works with dogs and cats, and she's looking at some point to be able to do that with the larger animals.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you guys were co-founders or part founders of the afterlifedata.com, which has a lot more information about the process of afterlife and for the souls.
Yes, we have a lot of information on there. You know, there's six major sections that people can explore. The death experience for adults, the death experience for children, our transformation from human to spirit, the afterlife itself, reincarnation, and then life on Earth and how that, you know, all blends in. So there's a tremendous amount of information. Within each one of those sections, it's, of course, broken down into many other topics. And we have a total of 265 life after death topic questions within those six major areas. So there's a lot to read, a lot to explore, and we intend to continue expanding the information that we have in there in the future. And we are actually currently using Denise Lascano's book, and she is a very well-respected world-class medium, and she has a lot of information in there that we're adding to the mix of some of these historical writings that are in there as well now.
Yeah,
well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, we extracted the research that or the information across a number of historical sources from well-respected authors regarding the spirit life and the afterlife and spirit communications, and we compared that information across these 265 topics to see whether there was agreement. And some of these works go back 150 years; some are very recent, and we found through various statistical analyses that there's almost a 95% agreement across these works regarding the afterlife and what it's like and what the experience of death is and what happens after death and so forth and so on. So there's a lot of information that we've compiled on that site.
Yeah, and cross-referencing. And you guys touched on something a little bit earlier when we were chatting that I see people encounter, and I did an Angel Pets conference recently to help with pet end-of-life care and grief, and one of the things that we chatted about was your relationship with your pets still exists, and everyone in the room can relate to, after a pet had died, feeling them with them, you know, either at a park or at home or seeing them in their dreams, and even if they didn't understand that they're you know, soul, you know, still goes on. They had that experience. Everybody was shaking their head. Yes, yes, I have had that experience.
Yes, that's very true. You know, both Dennis and I have lost animals in our lives, and we feel them around us on a regular basis. We have one cat now that we swear has part of the soul spark of one of our other cats.
Yeah.
So similar. And, you know, there's just so much of that that happens. And, you know, the skeptics will say what the skeptics will say, but, you know in your own heart and soul what's going on. And if you allow that to, you know, continue on, that love to continue on, you know, that animal is with you, as are the people that have passed in your life.
Another thing that we found in terms of our research is that the individual identity of every animal and every person is never lost. Okay, so it's not like the animal soul goes into the afterlife and then merges with some greater consciousness and then comes back out as a different animal. That animal, that individual spark of identity is never lost. That is why those animal trackers actually exist in the afterlife, because they can find that particular individual animal and bring it back, either through, you know, for example, through a dream or through the feeling that they're around, or if you're in the afterlife, you can actually visit with them. So,
well, I know that's providing a lot of comfort for a lot of people out there just to even consider this. And we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and continue talking about PET and afterlife and a lot of other things. So join us back in just a minute. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. Okay, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are chatting about a very interesting topic of pet afterlife, pet souls, and we're talking with afterlife experts, Dennis Grega and Michelle Sebo. And we're just discussing, you guys had just mentioned that the soul doesn't change into something else, and it stays the same. So if you follow that, do we come back? Do our pets come back?
The pet souls are the same as the human souls in respect that we're attached to a larger identity. And so that consciousness that has formed a particular pet will form other types of animals, or maybe within the same, you know, cat or dog genre, so to speak. It could, if it decides it wishes to. It could come back. But again, it will come back with a mix of different characteristics within that larger identity. So that's why the individual, the original one, you know, Fido, is never lost. And whether it comes back as something else, it will be its own new, unique soul when it incarnates. But there will be a relationship, because it will be connected with this much larger identity.
Wonderful. Okay. All right. And so that, so it's possible for people to have the same pet come back. Or, you know, is it, I mean, the that same soul, but even though it may be a different dog or a cat or whatever.
Right. It won't be exactly the same, but it will have the characteristics and some of the attributes of the previous animal
Yeah.
And so then you'll be able to recognize or identify those characteristics, and it will be true because it will be coming from the greater, from the larger identity, and so it will be part of that same consciousness that formed those different animals.
Yeah. Yeah, I had something really similar happen. My current dog, you know, just reminded me so much of a childhood dog that I had had. And it was, you know, I just felt it. And I don't know, you know, I'm not talented in that way of connecting, but I consulted with an animal communicator and asked, and she's like, yes. And it was just so amazing.
Yeah, isn't that a great feeling?
Yeah.
That's why the way we're feeling about one of our cats here, that there's a lot of characteristics in her that represent our matriarch that died at 17 a few years ago. And so, yeah, it's really astonishing to just watch the way she acts and what she does. It reminds us so much of Kitty.
Yeah. Yeah. You could read her story, and by the way, on our blog.
Oh, nice. Okay, all right. So if someone wants to read about what your experience was with that, and I think it's really important to just allow yourself to feel what you're feeling and, you know, be open.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things, Lee, that happens when we lose either an animal or someone, a human that we love, is that we become very grief-stricken a lot of the time, and
yeah,
it's very overwhelming. And if you allow that to overwhelm yourself too much, then it's very, very difficult for you to see all the wonderful little synchronicities that can happen. You know, there's these wonderful little messages that can come through, you know, from, you know, a flock of butterflies or, you know, birds that particular person loved, or maybe the animal loved to chase butterflies all the time. And, you know, there's one in particular that, you know, showed up all the time and your animal chased around, and all of a sudden it's showing up again and again and again, you know. And, you know, there's your animal.
Yeah.
You know, seeing these messages. But, you know, if you have a lot of grief, and this is something that I tell people in terms of, you know, trying to deal with it and allowing these spirits to come through, don't allow that grief to overwhelm you. And I know that's so difficult to really do when you're very grief-stricken by a death.
Yeah.
But if you try to relax a little bit and try to, you know, maybe meditate or pray if that works for you, something to just release that grief just a little bit, to allow those things to come through, you will find that you will be able to maybe see or hear or see messages, some kind of indication that that soul is still around.
Yeah, I think that's a very important understanding, is, you know, that there are messages. You know, I had a friend that just, you know, she saw a butterfly after her father died, and it landed on his gravestone, and she just knew, you know, she felt it, and she allowed herself to feel that, and it provided some comfort and some understanding that there is more going on.
Yes, yes, that's very true, and, you know, and these things are subtle. You know, the feelings can be subtle, the images can be subtle. The visitations during sleep can be very brief, but allow yourself to see and feel and hear those things, you know, without trying to force them, without,
yeah,
you know, allowing that grief to overwhelm you. It's really trying to calm yourself and center yourself a little bit more. And those things will happen.
Yeah, I think that's some great great perspective and great understanding there. And that, you know, grief is one of the hardest things we have to go through. I think that the separation, the physical separation of a loved one, whether it's a person or a pet, and it can be just overwhelming and devastating. So I love that advice of just relaxing and being and being open to it.
Yeah, it really is important. And, you know, kind of on the heels of that, there's another thing that people, I think, get, you know, when people are grief-stricken, it's often not just because of the death, but maybe the way in which the animal or the human died. And
right.
They're concerned about, you know, the amount of pain maybe that person or animal went through. And usually when there is something that is, you know, very painful or, you know, an accident, something quick, you know, that soul is gone. It's already out of the body. So they're not even experiencing what you think they might be experiencing in terms of, you know, extreme pain or, you know, something along those lines or some kind of horrible thing that's happening to them. You want to expand on that a little bit more, Dennis?
Yeah, actually, there's many reports of, like, even humans in battle that are out of their body before they actually die in battle. And it's,
wow.
And also in accidents or in plane crashes, the inner self knows when it's going to happen and pulls out before the actual event. We've heard reports that it's easier to die than it is to get born.
I would believe that, actually. Wow, right.
You know,
yeah. Go ahead.
A third aspect, too, in terms of grief regarding either animals or humans. And part of that grief is a reflection of your own beliefs, and that is your mortality or what you think is your mortality. If you have an understanding or a belief in the afterlife, death doesn't become as scary anymore. And because of that, even though you'll feel and grieve for the loss, you also know that person or pet is still very much alive. And it's the more grief-stricken you are, probably it reflects the less of a belief in knowing what has happened or about the unknown or where they are, and maybe a belief that they actually are extinct. And that, I think, is part of the grief that can really hold back a soul and hold back yourself from being open. And that is, you just don't know if they're really still alive or not. And part of that grief is reflecting that.
So, well, this is great information, and I know our listeners are processing this. And, you know, at least if we can relax and be open to this, then, you know, we can explore and see what we feel and, you know, help this let us provide us some comfort and understanding of the greater, bigger picture of all of our souls, and, you know, that it's not necessary, it's not the end, you know, that we all go on. And I think that's wonderful. And you guys also have another website with the veil. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's called
Voices Across the Veil, right?
VoicesAcrossTheVeil.com, yes. It is a website where people can sign up to have readings with world-class mediums and communicate with their animals or their humans that have passed. It's something that we created because through Afterlife Data, we had numerous requests for recommendations for mediums around the world. And it was something that, you know, we weren't familiar with mediums in every part of the world, so it was very difficult for us to give somebody a recommendation. But now with this service, people can attend a one-hour group session via video, online video conference for a very, very reasonable fee. Much less than you would for a private session with these mediums, and be able to have a chance at communicating with those that have passed. So it's very, very exciting.
Yeah, I think one of the things that people, a little bit of an obstacle is knowing, okay, who can I trust, or who is quality, or who's the real deal? And, you know, here, you know, your website is providing a network of quality providers.
Yes.
And mediums.
These are world-class mediums. They have many years of experience and have demonstrated a history of providing evidential information, information that the person can confirm and basically get their own personal data of confirmation of the afterlife through these communications.
Yeah, and I think that's what it comes down to, is experiencing it. And once you experience it, then you know, and you have that feeling, that just that inner feeling of knowing, and there's really nothing like it.
Right.
Yes, absolutely, Lee. I mean, that is really the biggest thing. You know, we can sit here and tell you all about all kinds of things, and, you know, your listeners can, you know, sit and listen and learn, and all of that is great. But until you really have an experience of some kind, that's when it really starts to hit the road, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing like personal experience.
Yeah, it brings such a depth of understanding. Yeah, it brings a depth of understanding of, you know, what that feels like to have that communication with that beloved pet or you know, person, because we're all souls. And so well, this is just tremendous work that you guys are doing. Wanted to thank you for being on the show and sharing with us your work and what you do, and would love to have you back to go into more in depth, maybe even take callers if we can set that up. But tell us again your websites and how people can learn more about you and your work.
Our primary website is afterlifedata.com, and people can contact us through our contact page there, and we welcome any type of communication with them. You know, we do regularly answer questions if people have them. Voices Across the Veil, and Veil is spelled VEIL.com, is where people can sign up for the medium of succession.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Dr. Dennis Grega and Michelle Zabo, for being here today. And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about chiropractic animal medicine with Dr. Allison Faber. Join
Thank
us in
you
a
so
minute.
Much, Lee.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Lots of love. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com. And the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. Okay, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we have a wonderful guest with us this afternoon, Dr. Allison Faber with Full Circle Vet.net, and she is a veterinarian who practices animal chiropractic. So welcome out, Dr. Faber. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, great. So you specialize in animal chiropractic, and you also call that spinal manipulation therapy. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I think actually that different schools set themselves apart by referring to it as different things, but really those terms are synonymous to me, is, you know, the manipulation of joints to provide more motion and other health benefits to that.
Yeah, okay, well,
so,
I like
they're
that.
They're two synonymous terms.
Yeah, it sounds a little gentler, but is this animal chiropractic or spinal manipulation therapy, is it like the same in humans but for animals?
Very much so, and I think that just as you can have very different methods of practice in human chiropractic, you can really have very different methods of practice in animal chiropractic too, with the same goal, but with just different methods of producing that goal. But yes, very similar.
Sure. Sure, just like there are probably different methods of massage, you know, and
absolutely
different therapies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us what it's like for an animal to get a session.
I do both the small animals, which incorporates dogs and cats, and I do horses too. So obviously it takes a lot longer for the horse. But as far as, you know, the dog and cat adjustment, since I am a regular veterinarian first, and most people certified in chiropractic and spinal manipulative therapy should be regular veterinarians. I guess that's a bit of a judgment call on my part, but most of the professional colleges that are more than just a weekend long, you know, are veterinarians. So I do a regular vet exam first to make sure that I'm not missing anything with that medicine for the reasons that the animal is presented to me. So I do a physical exam, and a lot of that incorporates neurology or a neurological exam of some sort, like testing reflexes and watching how the animal moves and that sort of thing. And the way that I was trained to the gentler I can be, the more I can get accomplished. So my whole goal is to do some tissue releases and really start very gently with the animal and sort of test out how stuck those spinal segments are. I kind of work from the rear end to the front end, and the whole procedure can take anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes, depending on what I'm working on. Did that answer your question?
I've been considering, you know, taking my dog for a chiropractic session, and, you know, just wanted to know, you know, what she would experience, and what, you know, is it painful? Can they get hurt? You know, what do I need to be concerned about?
You know, the way that I was trained, it really is very much a continuation of the way that I practice, and I don't think the dog should experience any pain at all. I've done nothing but veterinary chiropractic for 9 years, and I can't think of a time when I've had, other than necks, I think that neck pain can be a little bit uncomfortable when adjusting, you know, and that is one of the reasons that I think you ought to have a veterinarian work on your animal, is that if there's pain in certain areas, a veterinarian may have a few more tools in their bag as far as how to deal with that. You know, maybe we need to x-ray the neck. Maybe, you know, they might be a little more attuned to the neurological signs of having a problem. So in my humble opinion, I don't think your pet should experience any pain. That's one of the reasons that I do a lot of tissue release and what might be termed myofascial release. Logan is a term that does a lot of, releasing of ligaments around the pelvis and other areas of the body to make the chiropractic more gentle. So, you know, I don't think your animal should experience any pain at all during that.
So you touched on something I'm curious about. So you can be an animal chiropractic practitioner without being a vet?
Well, I have heard of those in the realm of horses. And most states' laws read that you cannot inject or do acupuncture without being a veterinarian. You can't put anything in the body without being a veterinarian. But there are some weekend classes, when I say that disdainfully, I don't intend it that way, but there are some shorter period classes to do some very brief chiropractic. I hear of it mostly in horses. There are certain individuals that will go to shows. I'm not sure about the dog shows. I think the people who are at the dog shows and the agility trials doing chiropractic, I believe the ones that I've heard of out here in Virginia are veterinarians. But the veterinary law does not read it does not read that you have to be a veterinarian. You're supposed to be, if you're a human chiropractor, you have to work with a veterinarian in order to adjust animals. You have to have an association with that person in most states. But I think that somehow spinal manipulation might be a little akin to massage. You know, I think that there are folks that don't necessarily call themselves chiropractors that will do chiropractic without being a veterinarian. Again, I can't help but being biased because that's my training.
Sure. No, and that's something I think that's very important for us to be aware of, you know, if we're going to seek out, you know, chiropractic or spinal manipulation therapy,
absolutely,
you know, for a pet, is check out, you know, qualifications. I think that's
absolutely
huge. So tell us about some of the conditions. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you asked me if an animal can get injured during a chiropractic treatment. I didn't address that either. You know, I've never experienced that. So, again, I think that maybe who you have adjusting makes a big difference with that. I don't think the intention is it ever to injure them. And I think that maybe having some good background and some good veterinary care behind that will preclude any injury. And most adjustments should be gentle, especially when we're talking about a dog. You know, you shouldn't need to use a lot of force on a cat. You know, you shouldn't need to use a lot of force on a small animal. And really, the way that I was trained was that understanding and learning to palpate the plane of the joint, so moving the body so that I can assess the actual plane that joint is moving in, it takes very little force to adjust down that plane. So even with a horse, people, you know, big strong men will look at me and say, well, you're just a woman, how can you adjust a horse? And it really doesn't take much force at all. So your pet should not be injured by chiropractic.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love knowing that. I love knowing that it's gentle work to help with the realignment. But tell us a little bit about the conditions that this would be beneficial for our dog, cat, or horse.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And this sounds like Tigger, who says, you know, Tigger likes anything to eat. Most conditions would benefit from some chiropractic, in that chiropractic addresses helping your joints move better, and a lot of those joints are in your spinal cord. So if your spinal cord isn't flowing well, in that every little spinal segment has a root that comes off. So the spinal roots that come off in the middle of your back actually plug into your intestinal tract, maybe into your heart, maybe into your kidneys, your liver. All of the connective tissue through there, your rib cage muscles. So one little spinal root really is responsible for a lot of different things, and certainly they have overlap. The interesting thing for me with chiropractic is that if your spinal roots aren't flowing very well, then they can compromise those organs. So it's a real blanket statement to say any condition could be benefited, but who knows if some irritable bowel disease couldn't be benefited by freeing up spinal segments in the middle of the back in order to benefit the digestive tract better, or heart conditions. I've seen a number of dogs who have been diagnosed with heart conditions, and they're either on medication or not, but they have a surprising amount of chiropractic spinal segments out of alignment through their shoulders. And I think to myself, well, is this a cause of it, or did the out of alignments actually cause the heart not to be functioning well, and I can certainly make a case either direction. But if there's compromise on the spinal cord, then it actually can bring your whole immune system function down, because there's stress in the body. The body tries to deal with that, and even though you and I might not see the compromise, it's there. So doing regular chiropractic can actually improve the immune system. It can improve the entire way that the spine functions. So most of my patients, to answer your direct question, most of my patients are, you know, they end up being agility dogs or dogs that are under performance, and their owners can really tell when their gait or their way of traveling is compromised. But I also see a number of older dogs who their owners aren't quite sure what to do with their hind end weakness or these other conditions, and or their owners have been going to chiropractic and they understand the global health benefits of having a healthy spine.
Yeah, I think that's really insightful. And, you know, I'm not, you know, I mean, it's all connected, is what you're saying.
It is. That's the bottom line.
It's all connected, and things that we think may not be related, you know, to good posture, you know, or alignment, you know, may very well benefit from it. I think that's the biggest take-home message is to think about the overall health and
overall
and how
body effects. You know, and I the my older patients, you would definitely see more improvement visually. You know, often when you have holistic medicine done, whether it's acupuncture or chiropractic, often or massage, often you'll be sore for a day or you'll be tired for a day. And the global term for that, I believe, is healing crisis. And I don't really like to use the word crisis because it sort of implies bad things.
Yeah.
But it's sort of your body taking a big step backward when it's being asked to heal. And so if your nerves are not being used, then they atrophy a little bit. So if that, let's say that nerve in the middle of your back, that spinal root coming out of your spinal cord has been pressed upon by a spinal joint that isn't moving very well. Once we free that up and we start to move it again, it's like a leg coming out of a cast. So that little spinal root that may have atrophied or shrunken a little is now getting its full current going back through it, and it has to heal and it has to grow back. So often we'll have especially with my older patients, I'll have a day or two that they might be sleepier, or they might be sluggish, but in the end, you'll see the biggest result with the older patients. The younger ones, you know, they might be a little bit more maintenance. You might not actually visualize that big of a change with them. But those, you know, just being, the condition of just being in the world, I think, certainly could be argued for being a chiropractic benefit.
Yeah, and getting everything flowing and moving, and you know, with the mobility of not only the muscles and the joints, but like you said, the nerves. I mean, I think that's huge. That's huge.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, this is very interesting, and we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to continue chatting with Dr. Allison Faber and learn more about animal chiropractic and spinal manipulation therapy. Join us in just a minute. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we're chatting with Dr. Allison Faber, and we're talking about animal chiropractic and spinal manipulation and how this can benefit your pet. And so, Dr. Faber, tell us a little about who would be the best or ideal client or candidate.
Again, I sort of tend to think that there is no ideal candidate. Often, the more compromised animals that come to me, you're going to see the most benefit out of that. You know, the older dogs, often weakness in the hind end is not something that Western medicine can address. So, you know, if people have been medicating or giving joint supplements for arthritis and they see strange gait in their dog's hind end, most people attribute that to arthritis when really, oftentimes it's weakness. You know, our little wiring just wears out over time. So I feel like probably the old patients you'll see the most benefit from. So I was certainly one of those people that I guess I was skeptical of my own medicine. I had to have the universe bring me patients to sort of prove it to myself sometimes, but the biggest change usually was in those older animals. But sometimes people will say, oh, well, you just do the three-year-old while we have the old dog here too, and I'll adjust the three-year-old, and by golly, they see change with that as well. So, you know, I think that the whole idea of maintenance is surprising with chiropractic.
Yeah.
You know, the ideal patient would probably be young ones, just to bring them once or twice a year for a maintenance tune-up. I remember a woman bringing me a show puppy. She did. She showed her Vishlas, and she had flown the puppy in from California all the way to Virginia, and she brought him to me when he was 4 months old. And I, you know, I was in my learning about chiropractic phase, and I thought, well, you know, puppy, how much can they have going on? She brought him to me at 4 months. She brought him to me at 5 months. She brought him to me at 6 months, and that puppy had chiropractic at every turn. So when you think about what young animals go through, what puppies and babies and kittens and foals, I mean, they are just bonking themselves off of everything and falling all over things. And, you know, I'm surprised at how much chiropractic young animals have. So ideally, you know, we start when we're little and we allow the spine to grow full and strong, and we allow our spinal cord, our skeletal system to grow through. You know, if we're lined up, then our bones are going to actually grow to meet that alignment. So I'd say yeah, young animals, but again, I can make a case for anybody.
yeah. Well, I think the proof's in the pudding there, like you said, but also, you know, the better that we can align and get that flow, you know, proper flow of the nerves and the system, that it all works, you know, together.
To benefit,
and,
absolutely.
You know, reading on your website, fullcirclevet.net, some of the benefits, common ailments, and that's increased mobility, but you also list decreased allergies.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
I think that would surprise a lot of people. It surprised me. Go ahead.
Yes, it surprised me too. You know, I'm here trained as a regular veterinarian, and I was certainly open to holistic medicine, but didn't know that much about it, I guess.
Yeah.
I hadn't experienced as much about it. And admittedly, I do both chiropractic and acupuncture together. So sometimes it's hard. Often I do them together because I feel like they go really well together. But often, you know, I will do an adjustment on every animal that walks into my practice. And if you think about what we had spoken about a little bit ago, that whole immune system, you know, if your body is compromised, if those little spinal roots are experiencing a squeeze from joints that aren't moving very well, then it's going to affect your immune system. And so really what allergies are is an immune system overreacting to the world or being a little bit out of whack itself. So, you know, distinctly and almost in theory, I think that the chiropractic can help that sort of thing. This is a little off tangent, but back when I did just do chiropractic, I had a woman call me about her lovely little, I guess you'd call him a pit bull. He was a rescue dog, and lovely little white dog, and he had cancer of his bladder. And she had called every other holistic vet in the area. And so when I was sitting at her kitchen table, I said, well, you've got him on herbs. You've been doing acupuncture. You've been doing homeopathy. We've changed his diet. You know, I said, what would you like me to do? Because it sounds like you've covered everything. And she said, I don't know. What else do you have? And I said,
right.
She was, you know, trying for anything, as you can understand, that bladder cancer.
Yeah.
Good thing. Have. And so I said, well, we could adjust him. And so we adjusted him. And she said his bleeding decreased by 75% for a good period of time. And he was very, very stuck right over his upper lumbar vertebra, which would, you know, plug right into that bladder. So my assumption would be that the organ was actually, you know, impacting the spinal cord in a negative way, but he felt so much better after that too. And that was a case where, you know, it was just chiropractic. I wouldn't have believed that myself, but for that, just in a chiropractic adjustment to decrease bleeding, I think that speaks a bit to the compromise that the body was feeling from those spinal segments, you know, having problems
there
and not innervating very well.
Yeah. And what a dramatic, you know, we're a dramatic recovery, and, you know,
absolutely.
I think it's eye-opening for me, I know, to learn the vast conditions that, you know, acupuncture and chiropractic spinal manipulation, you know, can have, and it's huge.
Mm-hmm. It's eye-opening for me, too. You know, I, just when I think, certainly earlier on in my practice, I would listen to the talk about what all these things could treat, and my skeptical mind, really? I'm just not so sure about that. And again, I've had all kinds of patients that have come to me and opened my eyes to the fact that not every medicine can correct everything, but many medicines can benefit. And you don't know till you try. That's the bottom line. And you don't know when you're going to experience a miracle until you give it a shot. So
Yeah, and
the healthier
the
bodies,
fact that
the healthier bodies in general, if you address something within a shorter period of time of it being a problem, then you have a much, much better chance of curing it with any medicine. Whereas if I have someone who brought me a long chronic saga of we've been trying to fix this for a couple of years now, it's just harder to treat with any medicine. And that's really where I would say the allopathic, or what we know as Western medicine, the drugs and the surgery, that's almost necessary at that point in the game when things have become quite structural. But if you can address things in when they're still in the imbalance phase rather than when we're, completely out of whack, then that's really helpful.
Yeah, and I'm curious where traditional veterinarians, how receptive are they to this?
I get a big smile on my face when you ask that.
Yeah, and I have a story to tell about it, too.
Well, you hear, I am a regular vet, and I was a regular vet. I say regular, a traditional veterinarian for 10 years before I did my practice, and I've been doing nothing but this for 9 years. So I've had my own skepticism over it, and again, so, I bring my own skepticism to the table for sure. And I remember the veterinarian, one of the wonderful vets in my area, said that I could come and just see my patients out of her practice. And I tried to schedule myself on the days they were doing surgery. And she had a colleague who was of my generation out of vet school at a very prestigious, very scientific vet school. And that woman, when I told her what I was doing, she sort of looked at me, paused for a moment. She said, "Oh," and turned right back to what she was doing.
Right.
And it was in a couple of months. She came running to me about a mutual case that was a 19-year-old cat who'd been in very mild kidney failure for a couple of months. And she was all excited, and she said, "Dave is out of renal failure." And I said, "Cool." She goes, "No, his kidney enzymes are normal." And I said, "Yep, that's what happened."
Yeah.
And, wow. You're right, it's cool. Her husband is a regular vet in my area. As I continue through my practice, I have more and more veterinarians referring to me because I think, A, they know I do a regular physical. So I'm not forsaking my regular veterinary medicine. I'm not just using my holistic medicine. I'm not just thinking that that's the only thing on the table. I think that's helpful when we approach that realm. And I will have people bring me dogs and say, "Oh, Dr. So-and-so just thinks the world of you." And I'm thinking, I don't even know who that is.
Right.
But, I have other holistic colleagues that I've seen at conferences, and boy, they are out to throw this down people's throats and to force all these vets need to be referring to us for these conditions. And, we all are learning. All of our lives we're learning. So, at the traditional vets, if it's their time, they will have those patients come to them, and they can visually see the improvement. And that's how we, get this through, I guess, and get holistic medicine more understood.
The testimonials and the cases and the proof and the results. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, this has been really fabulous to learn more about this, and I'm going to get Maddie a visit. Help her. So, but thank you so much. This is Dr. Allison Saylor. Her website is fullcirclevet.net. Thank you so much for joining us and enlightening us about the system of spinal manipulation therapy for our pets. And would love to have you back sometime if you would like to come. All right, wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. And join us next time. Thank you so much. Lots of love. Thank you for joining us. Please visit pethonoring.com or email me at pethonoring.com.